Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Prescription drug abuse is on the rise in Michigan. While the problem is undeniable, it's far from a clear-cut issue. What's the line between abuse and use when you're talking about powerful and easily addictive drugs, especially when it comes to teens who may be even more susceptible to the misuse of this medicine? To discuss this, I'm joined by Dr. Carol Boyd. She's the director of the U of M Institute for Research on Women and Gender and a longstanding researcher on substance abuse and young adults. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you so much.
Now, when you look at the rate that drugs like Ritalin are prescribed and the fact that many kids take these types of medicines for years at a time, how difficult is it to detect when a prescribed drug has become a problem for a teen?
Well, it is difficult, and that's probably one of the problems that we're having, because there's two types of misuse or abuse, and you alluded to it in your introduction. One is those youth and young adults, so I'll be talking about 12 to 25-year-olds, who use their own medications, such as you mentioned Ritalin, which is methylphenidate, or Adderall, and they have a prescription for their medication, but they're misusing it. They're using it to get high as well as for the medical purposes it is intended for. And that's very hard to detect, because even a urine test will show up that they're taking their medication as prescribed. That's one group of adolescents that are engaging in very high-risk behaviors that should worry us. The other group is the group that does not have their own prescription for a stimulant or a narcotic, or for that matter, sleeping pill, and they get it from a family member or a friend, and they're using somebody else's prescription, and they're either using it to self-treat a medical problem that they think they have, or they're using it to get high or to experiment. In all those scenarios I just described, whether a young person is misusing their own medication or they are engaged in using somebody else's medication, it is risky behavior. But it is very hard to detect until a youth really gets into trouble. And then it looks just like any other form of drug abuse. That is, their grades are falling, there's truancy, they're having trouble at home, they're falling asleep, and or they're hyper if they're taking a lot of stimulants. They also tend to, if they're using these medications to experiment or get high, they often mix them with other drugs, and this is lethal. This can be lethal. So for parents, they need to control and count the pills in their house, know what their youth are taking medically, and be sure that they're controlling them. And then they need to look for the very typical signs that their young person is in trouble.
You know, is part of the issue is that we have these drugs that are essentially medicines prescribed by a doctor, but there's an underlying reality that things like Ritalin and Adderall a lot of times just make young people feel good.
You know, that's a really good question. You're right. They're available, and they are medications. And you probably noticed that I try not to use the term drug, but I rather am using the term medication, because these are medications that then get misused, and they are perceived as safe because they youth watch their friend or sibling take doses of these medications and do just fine, and perhaps even do well in school if we're talking about stimulants, or they see their pain controlled by an opioid. And so it's hard to tell young people that these are dangerous, because they themselves are watching other people take them and without consequence, because they're taking them as prescribed. In terms of just taking them to feel good, I think you're onto something. I do believe that many of our young people are self-treating, and they are self-treating on conditions that they need medical help for. It may be that they are not having pain control for migraines or menstrual cramps, and they are taking their friend's opioid. Or they are struggling in school, and they think that by taking a stimulant that their friend has for ADHD, that that's going to help them study. The problem with that is that these are young people who would benefit from medical interventions and assistance, and they aren't getting what they need. Then there's the other group that's using it to get high.
Now, you know, there's this perception that you can take some medicines for a certain amount of time and you feel better and you kind of go back to your life unmedicated. But what's the reality? I mean, are we usually seeing kids that are given a medicine for ADHD or anti-anxiety drugs or medicines, are we usually seeing that they end up taking them for many, many years?
Well, it depends, and it really depends on the group that you're talking about. Typically, at this point in time, the field believes that if your child or young person, or for that matter, an adult, is diagnosed with ADHD, that they may take the medication, which typically is a stimulant, but not always. They may take it for a long period of time, and they can do this safely if they're taking it as prescribed. So in answer to your question, with the stimulants, they may take it for a long time. The opioid analgesics, which you hydrocodone and oxycodone products, sometimes the trade names are Vicodin and Oxycontin, are a couple, Percodons. Those should not be given to young people for chronic pain. Those are, for acute pain. I misspoke, acute pain. So for long periods of time. So that a young person who's had their wisdom teeth taken out, really they probably only need 2 or 3 hydrocodone, get them through the first day, and then they can move to NSAIDs, or they can move to over-the-counter medications. If they need more than that, they need to go back to the oral surgeon. So, but what is happening is that our young people are being given 20 hydrocodone from the dentist, and it's not appropriate for the kind of pain that they're being treated for, which is actually acute pain. Many of the opioid analgesics, such as Oxycontin, which has gotten so much press, were developed for breakthrough cancer pain. They were not developed for the acute pain that most of our young people have, so that many young people really don't need many opioids, and yet they're being prescribed opioids.
I'm talking to Carol Boyd, director of the U of M Institute for Research on Women and Gender, and we're talking about prescription drug abuse by young people and teens. Anti-anxiety drugs, how often are they given to teens who typically have no shortage of anxiety, and how addictive are they when it comes to young people?
That's a good question, and I may not be able to answer it in full. I'm not sure what percentage of young people are prescribed anxiolytics, which are the benzodiazepines, which is what you're talking about. I probably should know that. I think the numbers have changed. What I will tell you is that it's estimated that there's been at least a 50% increase in the prescribing of anxiolytics to young people over the last 10 years, and it may even be higher than that. So there's an increase in the prescribing of it. You're right. Adolescents have a lot of anxiety, and these medications are not without side effects. They are controlled, which means that they are considered to have addictive potential. Having said that, they do have addictive potential. They are very problematic when they are mixed with other central nervous system depressants, such as the narcotics that we were just talking about. As to but this is what I worry about with your question. I'm going to be honest. If my child needs an anti-anxiety pill because they have OCD or they have an anxiety disorder, I don't want to scare parents from getting their children the proper medications they need, because parents are so afraid that their child will become addicted. Because the proper use of a benzodiazepine should not lead to the child becoming addicted. The problem is that people are asleep at the wheel right now, and they're not monitoring these medications in their home, so that a child may start taking too many or using them inappropriately, and that is what you're talking about when you talk about getting into trouble or becoming addicted.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how about if a teen decides he or she wants to stop? Isn't it dangerous to simply stop taking these medicines once they've become habitual?
You're asking two questions.
In a sense, there are side effects if you were to just on any given day stop.
There are side effects. First of all, if someone is addicted to the medications, that is, they have tolerance and withdrawal symptoms, they need to get proper health to detox. I mean, proper health care to detox off of them. But aside from that, many of these medications, and there are other medications besides the ones we're talking about, should not be stopped abruptly. And the benzodiazepines are in that category. So that is, if a young person has decided that they want their child to stop taking these drug classes that we've been talking about today, they need to work with the healthcare provider to oftentimes taper the child off and to watch how the child or the young person or the young adult is behaving. That, by the way, is true for adults as well. Stopping medications such as antidepressants or some of the anxiolytics quickly lead to very uncomfortable side effects. And in some cases, it can be dangerous. And with the opioids, of course, you can go in, you can become dope sick. I mean, you just actually go in just like you would with heroin. You get the shakes and you're nauseated and you're sick.
Dr. Carol Boyd, the director of the U of M Institute for Research on Women and Gender. Thank you for joining me, Carol.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
And we'll be back with more Capital City Recap. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.